McDonald's is family.
Hello and welcome to episode 147 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
So this week we've got a special show for you because Angie was lucky enough to go to Sundance and she's going to break down some of her favorite movies from the event for us. And then me and Christy are going to roll into a review of The Founder. So Angie, it is all you first.
All right. So yeah, I just spent a week in very snowy Park City, Utah so that I could watch some movies that aren't out yet. And I'm going to just run down some of my favorites from the festival. So my very favorite movie of the entire festival, the one I just fell head over heels in love with, was Call Me By Your Name. It's the new film by Luca Guadagnino. He directed A Bigger Splash and I Am Love. And it's very much in a similar vein. It's like this, I feel like all of his stories are about like sexual awakenings and like really like gigantic, expensive Italian villas or something. And this is like also in the same vein, but this one is so good. It's a coming of age story about Timothée Chalamet. He plays the main character, and he's just this, like, teenage kid who is, he's an American kid, but he's, like, off in Italy for the summer, and then his dad hires Army Hammer to come and work with him, and then the two just, like, strike up this, like, really interesting relationship. It's so gorgeous, it's so sensual, which is a word that I hate using because I always feel like it sounds so cheesy, but it really, I can't think of a better way to describe it. It's just like, it's one of those movies where like, I feel like he's so good with like, you feel like you're there. Like, I feel like I can feel the sun on my skin. I feel like I can like, you know, taste the food that they're eating. Like, it's like that kind of movie. And it's really just like exquisite and gorgeous and, you know, tender and heartbreaking, but also, you know, it also just made me really happy. Like, it's a movie that I found myself still thinking about like days later, and I'm still kind of thinking about it. So it's a film that I really think is going to be in my top 10 at the end of the year. And I'm very excited about that one. So switching gears to a completely different kind of film, another film that I really enjoyed is The Big Sick, which was directed, I believe, by Michael Showalter, and it stars Kumail Nanjiani and Zoe Kazan, and it is based on the true life story of Kumail Nanjiani and his wife, Emily V. Gordon, who was played by Zoe Kazan in the movie. And it's basically just about, like, how their romance started and how it kind of developed, and then at, like fairly early into the relationship, she gets very, very sick. And how it kind of progresses from there. So it's as you might expect, just based on the premise and the cast, it's the kind of movie that is really just like laugh out loud hilarious, but at the same time is like made me kind of emotional. I know I'm mostly from Silicon Valley, so I wasn't sure, you know, like, how is this guy going to work out as, like, a rom-com leading man? Turns out pretty well. Like, he's really charming. He's, like, really likable. It turns out that if you don't purposely style him to look like a doofus like they do in Silicon Valley, you know, he looks pretty good. So I thought that
yeah, he dresses pretty well on The Meltdown. Like, that's kind of where my crush on him evolved, was watching him perform.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that one. Isn't that a show that he does with Emily?
She produces it. It's a comedy show they did in a real sketch in a comic book shop where they do stand up comedy. And like, he dressed really well. And what's funny is when he dresses like really, really well, his co-host Jonah makes fun of him. And like, my favorite thing on that show was they argued about a jacket he was wearing. And then Emily comes out on stage and goes, "He looks nice." And it's just, they're adorable.
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, Emily doesn't play herself in the movie, but I feel like, you know, not that I know that much about his personal life, but him and Zoe Kazan have a really warm rapport that it really feels naturalistic, and I would assume that some of it has to do with the fact that this is so developed out of his own life. So that one is really, I'm really looking forward to seeing that one hit theaters and watching everyone watch it. So I'm really excited for that one. Another one I wanted to talk about is Mudbound, which is a new movie by Dee Reese, who directed Pariah. And if you've seen Pariah, this is like a completely different kind of movie. Pariah was this like really, you know, kind of intimate coming of age story about a girl who lives in Brooklyn. Mudbound is this like sprawling southern family epic about two different families, one white, one black, that the white family owns the land and then the black family work on the land. And it stars it has an incredibly good performance by Garrett Hedlund, who is not an actor that I've ever really felt that, like, invested in. He's always just been one of those, like, interchangeable, kind of blandly handsome,
yeah,
white.
I thought him and Charlie Hunnam were the same person for legit years.
Yeah, no, he's that kind of actor. But then after this, I feel like I'm like, no, suddenly I'm on the Garrett Hedlund train. He is so good in this. So this story is set in the Mississippi Delta in I think it's like right around World War II. So, you know, just to give you an idea of when I say it's one white family and one black family and the relationship between them, like, that's the background that we're working with. Jason Mitchell is in it from Straight Outta Compton, and he's remarkably good in this. Him and Garrett Hedlund do a lot of really good work together. But the performance that surprised me most is Mary J. Blige, who is in this movie, but is literally so unrecognizable that I had the same conversation about 8 times at Sundance, where people were like, did you know that was Mary J. Blige? And, like, yeah, until someone brought it up to me, I didn't know. So it's, who knew? You know, like, she's been in a few things, but I don't think she's ever had, like, a really meaty, dramatic role before, and she fucking nails it. So, you know, I should wrap up really quick, but I wanted to give a shout out to one last movie that I saw and really loved. It's called Columbus, and it's directed by, it's a feature directing debut of Kogo Nada, who's done like a lot of like video essays for the Criterion Collection and stuff like that. It stars John Cho and Hayley Lou Richardson as two people who strike up like an interesting relationship in a interesting Midwestern town. And it's kind of it's one of those movies I don't want to hype up too much because it's very slow and it's very subtle and it's probably not going to be for everyone. But at its best, it kind of reminds me of like Once, like the way it just unfolds that delicately and kind of takes its time. It reminded me a little bit of the Before trilogy, except that these people walk around talking about architecture because it's like a running theme of the movie. And it kind of reminded me of Patterson too, the way this like seemingly ordinary town has this like kind of, you know, weird, interesting, artsy side to it. So that was one that like that was kind of my Sundanciest experience in that like it was a movie that I came in knowing very little about, have any idea what to expect, and walked out being like, whoa, cool. So that one is also near and dear to my heart. And then real quick, a few that I missed, but that you guys should watch out for because the buzz around them was fucking great. Get Out, the new movie by Jordan Peele. I think that one's actually coming out really soon. So you guys should be able to watch
it. February 24th, I believe.
Yeah. So there's that. There's A Ghost Story by David Lowery, which is literally a ghost story. It's Casey Affleck as a ghost in a sheet. I don't think he goes like, woo, but like, you know, apparently that's.
And Rooney Mara eats pie for a whole scene, right?
Yeah, yep. No, that's all I've heard about that. Like, I feel like a ghost
Rooney
story,
Mara
but
eating
like,
pie is last year, is like this year's like Daniel Radcliffe with a farting corpse.
It's Swiss Army Man, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I was just looking at that headline the other day and it still made me giggle.
And then finally Ingrid Goes West, which is a social media satire starring Aubrey Plaza and Elizabeth Olsen, and I realize that sounds like it could be great or it could be terrible, but apparently it's supposed to be quite good. And O'Shea Jackson Jr. from Straight Outta Compton, you know, Ice Cube's son, he's in it, and he's the one that everyone's kind of been talking about as like the breakout performance in that one. So I think I ran over my time, sorry about that. But I just had so much to share.
Most of the ones that you picked as your favorite too, I think, have distribution. The only one that hasn't locked at this point from your favorites, I actually don't know about Columbus, but
I don't know who's gonna pick
is,
up. It's a very
small film. D. Reese's movie is the only one that is. But it's in a bidding war. That's the only reason it has not locked distribution.
You know what's crazy? She did Pariah. Pariah got huge amounts of attention. It was a beautiful movie.
And then
movie.
She did nothing?
Well, no, she made this movie for HBO about, I think it was called Bess or something. And it's great. I wrote about it for Pajiba once. But, you know, she basically said, like, yeah, I'm having a really hard time getting funding. And it's like, it's crazy hard for black women to get funding as filmmakers. So I'm excited to hear.
Oh, she did Bessie.
Bessie, yeah, with Queen Latifah. It's great, by the way. It is an interesting movie about this jazz singer who I did not know a lot about, and I learned a lot watching that movie, and it's really interesting. But yeah, she's a fearless filmmaker, and I'm excited to hear so much. And everybody was raving about Mudbound, and I'm excited to hear how big the scale seems to be from what you're talking about. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. She's a hell of a filmmaker.
Cool. Good list, Angie.
Yay!
I'm all hyped about these. All right, so now we are going to say goodbye to Angie, and we are going to jump into a movie that only Christy and I have seen. It's The Founder, and Christy is going to intro that one.
Yeah, so The Founder, the story of Ray Kroc, a salesman who turned two brothers' innovative fast food eatery, McDonald's, into one of the biggest restaurant businesses in the world with a combination of ambition, persistence, and ruthlessness. That's a pretty good description. So I've actually seen this movie twice now. And the first time,
why? That's funny.
So the first time, I didn't know anything about Ray Kroc or anything about McDonald's, and So I sat down and I was like, oh, Michael Keaton, I love Michael Keaton. Tell me a story, Michael Keaton. And it starts off with Ray Kroc being like a hardworking guy kind of down on his luck. He's trying to sell milkshake machines and he's having a hell of a time and he's really got the gift of gab, but he doesn't have a product he can sell. So then he meets McDonald's and realizes this is a really great system they have figured out to create fast food. It's the first fast food system. And the guys, they have, what is his name? John Carroll Lynch.
John Carroll Lynch and Nick Offerman
play the McDonald's brothers. And they're such a good team together. And they like kind of tell how they came up and it very brief, succinctly. And you understand why he wants to be a part of their world. But then things start to turn where he feels like he's working so hard for them and not getting what he deserves. And so he starts getting really shady. And it hit a point where I realized that I'm not watching the hero of this story, but actually the villain. And I was so upset because I love Michael Keaton so much that I felt like sort of weirdly personally betrayed. So the first time I watched it when the movie was over, I was furious. Because it's a very upsetting movie, though it's a true story. But then when I sat back and considered it, and then when I saw it again, I think what the director here, John Lee Hancock, is doing is he's purposefully luring you in with Michael Keaton and with this story of like American determination and the American dream, and then which is American greed. And I thought this movie was really smart, surprisingly sly. I'm pretty furious that it didn't get an Oscar push at all because I think Keaton's great in it.
He's great in it. I don't know if I would go as far to say an Oscar push, but since watching it for the first time, the more I think about it, the more I wish I had given it just like a little bit of a higher score. Because I knew the story going into it the first time, so it wasn't some sort of, you know, twist reveal where I was shocked by that. But the first time I had watched it, in the end, I don't really know how to describe the feeling I had, but it was almost like after sitting through that whole thing, I was riveted the entire time. The pacing in the movie is absolutely impeccable, and Keaton is so captivating. This movie is never boring. Your attention never drips whatsoever, but in the end, something just made me feel, I don't know if hollow is the right word, but something was missing, okay. You know? And I think the more I thought about it, and then having watched it again, that's almost the point.
I think you're right.
It's like, what better... I don't mean this like, oh, great, feeling like,
no, but it leaves you
a little bummed. But that is the point of his journey. And for anyone who has ever, I don't care what profession you're in, it's like, I mean, look at what we do. Any profession is hard, but I always look at what we do, and it feels impossible some days. So when you look at anybody else doing any other kind of line of work and just see their unique climb to the top, whether it's extreme or subtle or whatnot, there's just something about that fight for success that I find inherently intriguing, no matter who it is, what their story is, what their job is. And even though he does terrible things throughout the movie, there's always a reason behind it. And he does such a good job letting you have access to that.
Yeah, it's not like he starts out as a bad guy.
I love how I'm doing hand motions like people can see. I'm pointing at my head right now.
Yeah, no, I really like that, though, because it's like, it's not like he starts out as a bad guy. Like, he starts out literally being like, you have a great idea, but we could make a lot more money out of it.
He's just, like, overly pushy and persistent to the point that it might come across as off-putting.
I think it's the idea of blind ambition, though. I think it's, like, because, you know, there's – I mean, we've even seen this in our field where you have those moments where you want the thing and you think maybe the way to do that thing is to do something shady or to call someone out or whatever. And my thing is always that if – when I'm faced with those moments, I want to make sure that whether or not I get the thing, that I don't feel shitty about how I did it later. You know, and like that's the thing.
Yeah.
Ray Kroc starts becoming very, very oriented with just getting the thing and not being concerned with how he got the thing. And it starts, I mean, it hits a point once they introduce Patrick Wilson, that's where the movie starts turning for me. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
And I just think the performances are really great. Nick Offerman is so good in this with John Carroll Lynch.
Oh, he's so
because
good.
Those two
the two of them together, it's something about their dynamic. And that's what makes you feel even worse for them in this whole thing is that they are just such genuine nice guys who are, you know, good old American kids with a big dream, and they fought so hard for it and they believed in it so much, and all they wanted
to do it right.
It's not about money. They just want to do their name right. They want to do their customers right. And and it's so freaking inspiring, and it hurts so much to watch that get squashed.
Yeah, and it's and that, I understand we're making it seem like this is such a gutting movie, and it's not exactly. It's just it is. It's an experience, and I think right now with everything mm-hmm. going on, it is exactly the kind of story we need to expose ourselves to, because you know we want to believe that success and wealth are virtues in this country. But it's all about how you get there, man. Like, yeah, Ray Kroc became a multimillionaire, and he made an industry that is all over the world, 1 billion served and all that stuff. But when you see how he got there, I don't know, man. It's really hard to be like, let's go to McDonald's. Like, I haven't gone to a McDonald's in years because I live near burger yeah. places that have, like, actual delicious hearty beef burgers. So if I'm going to do a burger, I'm going to do a burger.
Don't deny yourself the McFlurry, though.
Well, I miss the fries. I miss the McDonald's fries. But their McDonald's near me, it's like every time I go in there.
Perfectly cooked.
It's full of like people that you're just like, I don't want to be near you. Like, just there are people in there that are scary. And I'm like, I'm just not going to go to that McDonald's.
Oh, so they didn't uphold the original McDonald's dream.
No. No. Yeah. It's dirty teenagers all over the place throwing the cigarette butts. And it's terrible. I don't know where that voice is from. This movie's not set in the 30s.
That's how you walk into. That's how you walk into a McDonald's. You and you finger wag at everybody.
Listen here, sir. I just want some French fries, and I want none of your guff.
But you touched on it before. Something that also makes the movie special. I mean, this is definitely Keaton's show, and I have a feeling it would not have been as successful without someone as commanding as he is in that role. But oh my God, remind me of the director's
John
name.
Lee Hancock?
I have gold on the brain right now. Yeah. Just the style and the tone of the movie and the colors, that all comes together in a way that is super important to tell this story in a way that is both impactful and entertaining. And it's really difficult to pull that kind of pacing off. I really don't like to assess a movie by comparing it to another movie. But it just, I mean, I was briefly telling you about this, Christy, before we even recorded, is that Gold happened to have come out right after. And although it is, you know, comparing apples and oranges in a sense that one is trying to build a food franchise and the other is looking for gold, it's still an interesting comparison, their journeys to success. And I liked Gold. I'm not knocking it. Well, there's issues with it, but I'm not going to get into that, obviously. But when I look at that journey, it's almost like Keaton and Matthew McConaughey achieve very similar things through their performance, but where Gold completely fails, or not completely fails, but certainly falters big time compared to The Founder, is that the tone of Gold is kind of all over the place. And they try to do some of that quick cutting, energizing, right. You know, look at all the crazy stuff that's happening now. And then they're here, you know, and where The Founder nails it. And that's a big part of the reason the film moves forward with so much momentum. Gold is starting.
Yeah,
to stop.
There's a real liveliness to The Founder, including like there's one scene where they're explaining how they figured out how to lay out their kitchen so that they could create a fast food system. And that sounds like it'd be boring, like History Channel mm-hmm. nonsense, but they do it in such a lively way that it was really fun. And it's one of my favorite sequences in the movie. And like,
mm-hmm. there's so many great visual things like that. Even when they're all sitting at dinner and they're telling him the story of McDonald's, it's the way that they show that. You're not just sitting there watching the two of them yap on about it. The way they show it, that's and you get it because of the visuals they show. You get what they really went
yeah.
through.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because it's not that Ray Kroc didn't care about quality. He did. It's just that like his priorities shifted. And you get to watch them shift, which I think is also powerful. Like, he initially started out that he wanted to do what the McDonald's wanted to do, which was bring this amazing product everywhere. But, like, the bigger it got, the more he had to, like, make compromises. And you watch him making these compromises, and you watch him learn not to care about making them. And, I mean, it's intense. It's watching it, I like the first time I had, like, my heart in my throat for a lot of it because it speaks to so much of how I feel about success in America and all this kind of stuff. And then watching it the second time, because I knew where we were going, I was able to just enjoy the jokes a little bit more. And it's actually a very funny movie. And it's like not like
it's a blast to watch. I love how we started this conversation by saying, oh, it left me like a little bummed and disappointed in the country and people trying to be successful. But God, this thing is vibrant and moves so quickly. And Michael Keaton is just,
It makes me so angry because I feel like he's so good in this. And if the Weinstein Company, I feel like the Weinstein Company looked at what they had this year and was like, it's going to be the founder or Lion. And then for some reason they went with Lion, which I guess Lion's doing fine. I liked Lion okay, but Lion's not much of a movie. It feels more like a really great NPR radio story or something.
Did the founder ever even get its limited release?
It did,
in December,
but it was this weird thing.
It did, because it did qualify for awards. Yeah.
It was supposed to open like the second or third week of December, like a lot of them do, for a week in New York and LA. But then at the last minute, they scrapped that and said, okay, it's actually opening today in LA. And so it was open for a week in LA for the qualifying run, but then they told the press not to run reviews until its national release.
Yeah.
Which, the thing about that that's so confusing is, like, yes, if we run the review in December, it's not like everyone can rush out and see it. But then at least buzz can be generated, so maybe the people that have, like, a screener of it on their stack of screeners that every, like, guild gets at the end of the year might actually watch it. I don't know how many people watch The Founder, because it's kind of one of those things where people will watch the movie that everybody's talking about. So if you get a stack of screeners and everybody's talking about Manchester by the Sea and La La Land, you're going to watch those screeners. And so I think that Weinstein's shot themselves in the foot with this movie, because I think it's a much better movie than some of the ones that are getting attention, Hacksaw Ridge. And I just wish that, like, we could actually, like, focus on it and talk about it more. So I know we're reviewing it kind of late, but it was partially because we were just like, this movie deserves to be talked about. It's interesting and funny. And I thought when I first saw this movie, I thought this is going to be Keaton's Oscar movie. And then, like, this is going to be the one where he finally wins that Oscar, because he was nominated for Birdman, but he lost to Eddie Redmayne. And then he wasn't nominated for Spotlight, though he should have been. And now, like, I thought, this is it. This is going to be it. And he's owed. And he's not even in the running because no one saw this fucking movie.
Yeah, it is a shame. He is spectacular in this movie. I feel like even if it was talked about a little more, it might have been, I guess, a little bit of a stretch just because of the tone of
the
movie.
Yeah, the reviews are a little polarizing.
It doesn't scream Oscar bait, but, you know, those are difficult rules to kind of set up and predict how people will go, especially, I mean, if the buzz is right, you really never know what's going to happen. I mean, look at how Hidden Figures is just booming right now. And it's because we're talking about it. And I have a feeling that it got more nominations than it would have had it not been such a massive critical hit and a box office hit now. And I really wouldn't be surprised if it finds more success with actual wins throughout award season because of all that too. I mean, we talk about this on our shows all the time, is that I think it sometimes is forgotten that people that vote on these awards are human beings with opinions. Yeah. I don't want to call it a popularity contest, but when you think about, you know, voting in your high school election, it wasn't just about the person's policies. It was whether or not you liked the person and who was talking about who. There's just, like, human factors that come into play.
I think you and I can agree that it's like, you know, like, Angie just got back from Sundance, and it's like anytime you go to a festival, anytime there's a lot of opportunities to see all this stuff, you tend to get slanted toward the thing people are talking about because you want to be in that conversation. And I mean, that's what happens every award season. So The Founder got shut out of that conversation. So it's not a contender at all. I'm really glad to see Hidden Figures did. I was surprised that Hidden Figures did, not because I didn't think the movie's great, but because I worried that it was going to be seen as kind of like, I don't know, too like cheesy.
Yeah.
And too kind of heartwarming.
I mean, I've read comments on my review where people call it more along the lines of a Lifetime movie.
They're
and,
wrong.
You know, it's on the one hand, it's not fair, but obviously when you look at the just like the buoyancy and the tone of that movie, I can understand why someone might make that comparison.
I don't agree
with it, but I can understand why their minds
might
work that
way
and land on that conclusion.
Sure. I reject the idea that Oscar movies have to be like stone face serious.
Oh, so do I.
Yeah.
So do I, but it's just history. It's like you can just go back and look at what people pegged as their best picture, except but then of course we always have anomalies like Mad Max crushing it last year.
Yeah, that was really exciting.
So yeah, you really never know. All right, now that we've gone completely off topic, do we want to put in a final recommendation for The Founder? I'm pretty sure we both said go for
it. Yeah, I think it's great. I had it in my top 10 because since it was in the qualifying run, I counted it. So it was in my top 10 of 2016 because I think it's a really strong and interesting movie, and Keaton's performance just blew me away.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I really can't recommend it enough. So with that, that is a wrap on episode 147 of Popcorn Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Go on over to iTunes where you can rate, comment, and subscribe. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We're on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. And then we also have Facebook where it would be super nice if you liked us. Then all of us are all over the internet too. Christy.
You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. It's KRISDYPUCHKO. And I'm all over the internet, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com. And look for me on Faction Radio, where I'll be on It's Eric Nagel.
And Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at PNemiroff. I write for Collider.com. I'm on the Collider Videos YouTube channel. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next week.
Ray, we have no interest in a milkshake that contains no milk.